On episode 198 of the Tennis Files podcast, top tennis strategist Craig O'Shaughnessy will reveal his secret formula for transforming how you play the game, the first four shots.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey there, this is Mehrban Iranshad. Welcome to another episode of the Tennis Files Podcast, and it's great to have you listening this week, and I hope you're doing well and staying safe, and I've actually been playing a lot more tennis lately. I played in a Government League match last week, which was a lot of fun. And then I've been practicing my serve and taking video of my technique, which has been really fun and illuminating as always. Just really enjoying the increased time on the court. But for today's episode, and I hope you're playing a lot too, by the way, but on today's podcast, I've got top tennis strategist Craig O'Shaughnessy. And he is very famous in terms of his great coaching acumen on the strategy side. He, in particular, he coached Dustin Brown when Dustin was able to defeat Rafael Nadal at Wimbledon. So he was the strategist for him and concocted a great formula. And I've seen Craig on Berrettini's coaching cast of experts there on the sidelines. I think, in fact, I saw him like today in Rome, in the Rome a match for Berrettini that he won. So yeah, he is he's great, and he's been on a lot of shows as far as Tennis Channel and others, and commentating and whatnot. So it's really great to have him on today's podcast. I actually spoke with him several weeks back and decided that I wanted to release this audio clip of us. Not a clip, really, but, you know, like an hour worth of amazing information that he has for us on the first four shots, which he actually updated. So he's pretty much presenting on this particular episode. And he did actually use a slideshow, so you might hear him refer to the slideshow, but it's all good, and you'll be able to really get insights on first off, why are the first four shots really important, and then how to maximize the first four shots in terms of how to, you know, dominate and win them basically against your opponents, and also just some really amazing numbers on tennis, the first four shots and all the other shots, and you know, how a majority is really in just the first four while we're actually practicing the wrong way for just, you know, 100 ball rallies. So I will stop blabbering on and let Craig run the show. So I hope you enjoy. And without further ado, here is Craig O'Shaughnessy.
Start with a building block. So we're going to build a little bit towards the first four shots. But first of all, we need to lay the foundation. So when we're analyzing your matches or the players on tour, they're broken down into sets, games, and points. Points are the building blocks of our sport. So that's where the focus is going to be. We go to the very top of the game. It's like, okay, where's the ceiling? What's the highest level that's possible? Well, if we do an analysis of the number one player in the world, 2010 to 2020 here, we see that they win right around 90% of their matches. It's crazy. It's, you know, some of these years in there, if we start in 2011, Novak wins 92%, going 70-6. In 2015, he went 82-6. Another great year. Andy Murray even hit the 90% barrier right there, 78-9. So, you know, we would love to have these numbers playing out our league tennis, whether it's singles or doubles. But this is it. I mean, the other important thing to see is that the number one player in the world, also, if you look down there at the bottom, has won 686 matches, but they have still lost 87 matches. So you don't need perfection in our sport. It's definitely a game of percentages. So if the number one player is winning right around 90% of their matches, let's go to the building blocks now of the points that they win in the season that they become number one. And you've probably heard me talk about this over the years. So let's go quickly here. The number one player in the world takes a 50-50 battle and nudges it to a 55-45 advantage. And they are the best player on the planet. They are making millions of dollars on court, also millions of dollars off court, in creating this very small margin. It's also important to note that the number one player in the world loses 45% of all points that they play in the season where they become the year-end number one. So quite often for all of us, we win a point, we're happy. We lose a point, we're sad, we're upset, we're disappointed, we're negative, we're mad, we're losing our mind out there, we're hitting balls over the fence. You know, it's not about the roller coaster of winning I'm happy and losing I'm sad and going up and down like this all throughout the match. You know, you almost want to go out to the court and say, you know what, I'm going to give my opponent a quota. I'm okay to lose 45% of all points. You know, in a match, if it's a 55-45 balance, it's going to be about a 6-3, 6-3 match. So please be aware and have an understanding that it's okay to lose points. It's actually okay to lose a lot of points in our sport and still be wildly successful. This is a fascinating stat right here where we have the number one player 2015 to 2019. And, you know, there's 55.7, 55.5, 55.5 again, 55.4 and 55.2%. And so it just goes to show you how incredibly similar it is year after year. It's not, you know, these numbers, you know, Rafa dominating on clay or Novak dominating on grass or hard, you know, that takes the win percentages, you know, a lot higher or lower. You know, it's going to be the same year after year after year. Let's progress to the next one. This was a very interesting stat when I was looking up data for an ATP Infosys analysis piece. And I put in the parameters of or the filters of 2015 to 2019. We have a five-year data set. And we only have six players that have won north of 52% over that period of time. So imagine you playing for five seasons and you say, no, Craig, I only won 52% of my points in that five seasons. I wasn't really dominant. You are amazingly dominant. You are one of the best players in your league, if not the best player in your league. So one of the things as we set the stage for the information and the data of the first four shots is to understand that tennis is a game of insanely small margins. I'm sure you can think back to matches where, you know, things are pretty tied and there's one point, whether it was a break point or an opportunity to get to break point, that one point kind of changed everything in the match. You know, whether the match finishes a 7-6 or maybe even a 6-1, that one point early on that sets you on your course and things start happening in your favor. You know, that's what tennis is all about. There's, you know, you can have a 6-1 set followed by a 7-6 set, and it's a point here and a point there. So insanely small margins. Second part of our presentation here is when the point ends, it's going to be a winner, it's going to be an error. You know, a winner, by definition, is it just doesn't touch the racket. Any ball that touches the racket, error. That's an error. So let's get to our numbers. We play a sport, number one, we've already learned, of incredibly small margins. We now learn that we play a sport where errors absolutely dominate. And I have been to so many conferences, you know, also with collegiate teams, and I ask the players, like, if I'm going to watch your match, how would I see you trying to collect points? Is it more in the unforced error category, which is simply waiting and waiting and waiting and hoping your opponent misses? Is it hitting winners? Is that what I'm going to see you trying to do? Or is it forcing errors, which is getting it in, but making the opponent uncomfortable. And so many times people mistakenly in, oh, you're absolutely going to see me hitting winners. That's what I like to do. Or the opposite of that is, oh, I'm going to put every ball on the court and I'm going to run and I'm going to get the ball up high and I'm not going to miss. Both of those are really tough ways to beat players, not only consistently at your level, but to move up levels and beat players that are, you know, we might say better than you at the moment. This data came from the 2015 Australian Open. It's almost the same every single year at all throughout the slams. You know, we play a sport that is absolutely dominated by errors. And when we break them down with forced, unforced, and winners, we see that forcing errors is number one. That's what we want to do. We want to hit a shot that makes the opponent uncomfortable and they miss because we can repeat that. When you combine forcing errors and winners, that's aggressive play. Generally, you know, forcing an error is being aggressive. Generally, hitting a winner is being aggressive. So we see here that aggressive play definitely outweighs and outnumbers consistent play. So you say, okay, Craig, I'm all in with that. I see forcing errors is good. How do I do it? You know, and when I ask this question, I say, well, I've got a list of 8 ways to force an error. And I go, you tell me, you, instead of me giving you the answer, you have a think about it. So almost always the first two ways to force an error that players will guess is like, well, direction. If I can hit the ball away from my opponent, that will help force an error. Correct. Power. Yeah, that's true. Hitting the ball really hard or actually really, really soft can help force an error. And then there's a bit of a pause. And then we start thinking and going through it more and more. And here is the end result of that list. So it's not in any special order, but we start with the court and we start anywhere in the court. So consistency will force an error. Make somebody hit 4 consecutive backhands. You know, the first one's probably coming in. The second one, probably coming in. The third, I don't know about that. The fourth, you know, there's not a lot of players on the planet that will make 4 consecutive backhands. And if the backhand is the strength, then go to the opposite side, go to the forehand. It's not easy. So consistency, getting them deeper into the rally count will force an error. Direction, left and right, and also middle. Depth, front and back, and height. Get the ball up high around the head or above the head or from the knees to the ankles, getting it lower. We've cut the court up into a 3-dimensional cube, so we can't do any more to it. So let's go to the ball, which is spin, heavy top spin, heavy back spin, also no spin. Medvedev is a nightmare to play because he plays without any spin at all, and that ball is just flat coming at you again and again and again. We have power, and then we go to your core position where you stand. You know, moving in on a second serve creates pressure. Going to the net creates pressure. And last on our list is time, which is the time to get prepared for a shot. And what we're talking about here is taking away the time for somebody to get their hands and feet organized and set so that they can hit the ball consistently into the court. So of the 8 ways to force an error, what you're trying to do initially is to get any one of those in your favor to start. You hit a ball with good direction. You hit a ball with good spin. Doesn't matter. Get one in your favor. Then, when you get one in your favor, when the ball comes back, you'll be leaning on that ball. You'll be enjoying pretty much doing whatever you want. You'll be in control of the rally. Now, let's combine 2 of these together. Maybe you hit a ball with good spin and good depth. Maybe you've got good consistency and good height. Maybe time and core position go together. The opponent's ball will be coming back right around the service line. It will be short, and you will be stepping up into the court and having more control of the point. And lastly is 3. If you can get any one of these combined with another 3 at the same time, the ball will not come back in the court. There's too many things going against you. So good power, good spin, good depth, ball's not coming back. So as we look to force errors, and especially as we look to force errors in the first 4 shots, this is your list of how you go about it. Our old mantra is don't miss, put the ball on the court. Once we found out the analytics of matches, it's much better to think about how do I make my opponent miss. An old way of practicing is let's make 20 balls and do it four times. The new data says, let's just make four balls, the serve, the return, and the two shots that follow, the serve plus one and the return plus one, and let's do that 20 times. Serve, return, serve plus one, return plus one, catch it. Do it again. Do it again. Maximize the start of the point. Is consistency overrated? Which is consistency, you know, you can have, I guess, some different terminology for consistency, but essentially here is just, I'm just going to put the ball in the court again and again and again and again and again. I don't really care where it goes, but you know, I'm going to have margin and I'm going to not miss. So imagine being at the Australian Open. I'm sitting at my desk, looking above my computer at the screen and seeing this stat sheet. This is an official stat sheet from the Australian Open. And as we start at the top, you know, we see that Tsonga beat Baghdatis in four sets. And we see the regular stuff, aces, first serve points won, second. These things haven't really changed since statistics were first officially recorded in our sport in 1991. So now fast forward to 2015, and we have all the serving data, then our yellow line, our returning data, and then winners and errors. And imagine sitting there for the very first time, and I look down, I see this strange, unusual statistics here. And it says rallies of 0-4 shots, one lost. And we've got numbers. So let's look at Tsonga's numbers. There's a 79 and a 74. So the 79 is Tsonga's number, 74 is Baghdatis. Below is 5-8, 26 for Tsonga. He won that, and 20 for Baghdatis. But in the long rallies, Tsonga only won 5 and Baghdatis won 10. So the first time I see this, I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And then I'm like, how in the world do you have a rally of zero? That's unusual. And then who created this and who came up with it? So I dug around and I went to IBM, who were the official data provider. And the way that the way you need to think about this is we're always going to have the terminology of shots. How many shots in the rally? Whereas, and even here, you've got rally of 0-4 shots. It's misleading. It's not a shot, you know, suggests the ball hit the racket. And that's not what this is about at all. It's the ball hitting the court. So I serve to you, you return to me, I hit a winner. Three balls made in the court. The next point, I serve to you, you return to me, I make an error. Two, that's a rally length of two because only two balls landed in the court. So on the tournament totals page, they add up all the other things on this page for all of the matches except the rally length. So I sit there and I do it for all the matches that they recorded it for and figured out the tournament total for the 2015 Australian Open, which we're getting to here in a couple of slides. I gave them some nicknames to better understand what they're about. So 0-4, we call first strike. 5-8 of patterns of play, 9-plus shots are the extended rallies. 2015 Australian Open total points. This is what my data sheet said at the end of combining all of those matches. 70% of points were in 0-4, 20% in 5-8, and 10% in 9-plus. And as I'm sitting there looking at this, I'm looking at, like, what in the world does this mean? You know, the first time you look at it, you don't have an interpretation for it yet. I don't know what this is. This is a brand new species in our sport. And as I started contemplating this data, the first thing that hit me was, wow, 70%, which is essentially right on 7 points out of 10. And these are the most consistent players in the world, but 7 points out of 10, the best players in the world are only hitting the ball in the court a maximum of two times each. So a four-shot rally is two shots for one player and two shots for the opponent. I'm like, I've seen a lot of tennis, but I didn't realize that 7 points out of 10, these people are only putting the ball in the court twice on average as a maximum. So it's, you know, it's either a double fault as a zero, a one is a ace or return error, two is the ball comes back and it's either return winner or a serve plus one error, and then you've got the return plus one error. And then the next thing I looked at is 9-plus. I'm like, 10% of points reach 9 or more. And I think back immediately to our practice court, and that's what we've always obsessed about. We are always about consistency and shot tolerance and repetition and patience and perseverance. 90% of our practice court is in 9+. 10% of our match court is in 9+. So the first thing I think about is, well, the practice court's broken. We are not focused on the right things. Now, I'm working on my game at the moment. I don't know why I've got back into tennis, but I'm really enjoying it. I played a ton as a junior. I played collegiate tennis and then coaching a lot. You know, you're just on court 6, 7, 8, 10 hours a day, and the last thing you want to do is hit more balls. But now I've been off court so much, I'm really enjoying it. I bought a ball machine. I coach a couple of people here in Austin, but I love getting out on it. Like, I'm hitting my backhand. So, you know, for a coach, the one thing that's so crazy is that we feed a billion balls, but no one ever feeds us a ball. And now with this ball machine, I've got somebody to feed me balls, and I'm just grooving. And my backhand's feeling good. My forehand's feeling really good. The volleys are good. And I'm just able to hit a lot of balls. Now, I'm only doing that to sharpen the sword of the stroke. I'm not hitting 8 or 10 or 40 or 140 backhands cross court because I'm going to do that in a match and it's going to help me win more matches. I'm just going there going, I want to feel this shot and make it as clean and as competent as I possibly can. That's the difference there. Playing styles. So what is your label? We always give labels to playing styles, like Roger Federer, maybe, you know, a first strike player, Pete Sampras, you know, maybe, you know, even a bit more than that, first strike / serve and volley, Pat Rafter serve and volley, counter puncher, maybe aggressive baseliner as Novak, a counter puncher, maybe someone like a Leighton Hewitt, David Ferrer. You know, we like to give these labels. So I want you to think about what kind of playing style you are. I would say for me, I would have to put the word net in there somewhere. I grew up playing on grass courts in Australia. I love going to the net. I stay close to the baseline. Anything short, I'm coming in. So I got to think of exactly what it is, but the word net is going to be in my label somewhere. These are the 2017 Australian Open data points. So remember 2015 was 70-20-10. We're just slightly off. A little bit here, slightly under. Courts are a little bit slower. Maybe the weather was a little bit cooler in 2017. And we look at Roger Federer. Federer won in 2017, and he won in 2018. So these are his numbers. Remember, 70-20-10 in 2015. So he's above that. So if we are to describe Roger as a first-strike player, I would think that all of us, be included, looking at this presentation, would say, yeah, that makes sense. We see Roger elevated in the 0-4 numbers. So that's a fair comment to call Roger a first strike player. Now, here's Novak. I coached Novak at the 2018 US Open. Here are his data points. 55% instead of 70 or 72 as Roger was at the 2017 Australian Open. So he's far less in 0-4. Would you necessarily call Novak a first strike player? Well, when I ask this at the conferences that I do and the groups I do these presentations with, most people say no. That's 55% is not the data point of a first strike player. So there's your answer. Probably no is what I get back most of the time. Now, this is a question. We don't know who this is, but these are some real numbers from a tournament. And we see the player in 0-4 won 433 points, lost 326, plus 107. Wildly successful. 5-8, won 203, lost 150, only a 53-point advantage. And in 9+, 131, lost 133, minus 2, not nearly as good. Would you call this player, you know, good in extended rallies? Well, obviously not. They're minus. It's the only place they're minus. Would you call this player a first strike player? The answer is yes. They did great. They did twice as good or more, you know, slightly more than twice as good in 0-4 as they did in 5-8. This player is Novak Djokovic at the 2018 US Open. It's the same data set. So even though Novak came down and only played 55% in 0-4, he was outrageously successful in creating his advantage in 0-4. And that's the key. That's the key. How many do you win? How many do you lose? Novak is a first strike player. Roger is a first-rate player. You are a first-rate player. Even if your label for yourself may be, you know, I'm a pusher, you know, I'm a baseliner, I'm a counterpuncher. You know, I terrorize opponents by, you know, crazy slice and ugly shots and, you know, but I know how to win. You are also a first-rate player because everybody on the planet is. This is Novak's data set from Wimbledon in 2019. And, you know, from, we're going to be all very, very similar to this. So does it make sense? And this is what we've been doing for years, especially before 1991 when we had official match stats. But, again, this kind of data is very recent. It's only 2015 that it came on my radar. Why in the world would you go to the practice court and obsess about that red area? Why? It makes no sense. Your job is not to be ranked number one in the world as a practice player. You want to be ranked number one in the world or in your age group or at your club or win this tournament in matches. Matches are what matter. We've got to help flip and reverse this mentality where the old school mentality is let's go to the practice court, practice, then let's go to the match court. And hopefully what I practice on helps me win the match. Let's flip it. And let's say, okay, this is a match right here. This is seven matches for Novak. So that green area, he played the most. So why don't we obsess about that green area? Then we'll do a little bit in the yellow area. And then when we've got time, we'll certainly do the red area because it does exist in a match. But the green area is going to dominate. The green area is 0 through 4. Which rally length is the most important to win? So this is an analysis when we're looking at two separate data points. The first is because we're doing a percentage here, let's do it out of 100. So we have 100 players in the room. We say, did you win your match? 100 players raise their hand. Say, yes, we all won our match. We're all amazing today. So we're like, okay, we didn't tell you this, but we sat on the side of the court and recorded how many points you won and lost in 0 through 4, 5, 3, 8, 9 plus. Just like that picture earlier, I think it was Songren Bagdatis. So we know that data. We have 5 Grand Slams of data here. We have 2 US Opens. We have an Australian, Roland Garros, Wimbledon, 2 US Opens to make 5 data sets, 5 Grand Slams. So it's a combination of 2 things. Yes, you won your match. Did you also correspondingly win 1 of these rally lengths, 2 of these rally lengths, or 3 of these rally lengths? Did you win them at the same rate?
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's get to it. Match winners in 5 Grand Slams. No one lost a match. They correspondingly won the 0 through 4 rally length 91% of the time. So it's almost a lock. Won the match, 91%, I win 0 through 4. And when you look at that other 9%, there's something unusual or weird. You know, Karlovic down the other end, Karlovic playing Schwartzman at Wimbledon and Schwartzman wins. You know, Schwartzman's probably getting a few more balls back in play, extending it a little bit. But in general, right throughout our sport, 0 through 4, you win 0 through 4, you're almost assured of winning the match. 5 through 8, not nearly as close. Remember, we're starting at 50-50, not 0. So we start at 50-50. Match winners only conquer the opponent in 5 through 8 2/3 of the time. And in 9+, which you obsess about too much in longer rallies, you're only moving the needle from 50 to 55%. You know, we have data sets on first serve points won, second serve points won, net points won, baseline points won. What is this a data set of? Winning. That's what it's a data set of. This is all about winning. You have to have won the match but did you also win these one of these three small battlegrounds? You know, if you come to me and say, Craig, what matters most to winning? This is the slide I'm showing you. Winning in 0 through 4 is going to be number one. This is the two US Opens for men. And we see in the long rallies, it was 50-50. There was no advantage whatsoever in the longer rallies. And this is the ladies. Look at 9+. Every one of these ladies won their match. They had a losing record in 9+ in the 2015 US Open. Each rally length has a different landscape. So if we go to the practice court now, we say, okay, let's go and hit balls cross court. You know, you take your 14-year-old kid out there and all of a sudden the 14-year-old kid's hitting balls and this is what it's like, you know, in their mind. This is how the endorphins are firing. You know, we're in Tuscany. It's 78 degrees. It's gorgeous. You know, I'm looking out there, my little boy's hitting balls cross court, cross court, cross court. You know, he's starting to get a sweat. The coaches are applauding. He's doing well. The kid's just hitting tons of these easy meatballs that are just coming back to him exactly where he wants. You know, mama's happy on the side of the court. Look at her down there by that villa. She's got a glass of Chianti. She's in heaven. The coach is loving it. The kid couldn't be happier. You know, it's the 9+ in the practice court is heaven. Ball after ball after ball after, oh, I'm getting better. I'm getting better. 5 through 8, patterns of play. These are the smart players. Nadal, out of 0 through 4, 5 through 8, and 9+, Nadal on the tour has the highest number in 5 through 8. And it's all about, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go there, then I've got you there. So it's not too long, but it's these little moves, always these little moves. It's the chess of our game. And in 0 through 4, you know, the typical 1 hour lesson all over the world is 50 minutes of Tuscany, 50 minutes of a nice glaze of sweat. I've hit 722 balls today in my lesson. I feel fantastic. But then it's like, okay, well, at the end, let's hit a couple of serves. Yeah, just roll your arm over. Just warm it up, hit a few serves. Oh, our time's up. Okay, we'll see you next week. Maybe a couple of returns, you know, a little serve and volley, not serve and volley, a little approach and volley, maybe a couple of overheads. 0 through 4 is tough. We're going to show you the numbers of this. This is how the match starts. This is like a glacier in Switzerland, and we're going up it. And, you know, I get no rhythm with my serve, and I've got to practice my return, but the opponent's not, you know, they've missed their last 4 shots. So it's tough to get my rhythm. You know, 0 through 4, this is what it's like. It's the opposite of Tuscany. And this is why you go to your coach and say, Coach, why am I so good in practice, but I can't win a match? Why am I so good in Tuscany, but I can't get to Tuscany? Because every point in tennis starts right there. Every point. Are you practicing your serve enough? Are you practicing your return enough? On the other side of that mountain, you're going to look down into the valleys of Tuscany. It's going to be amazing. But you can't get there because you miss too much. You miss too much early on. The mode, the most common rally length in tennis. What is it? So we have, you know, all the way up to like 40-shot rallies sometimes, 30-shot rallies. But, you know, we have a lot of 8-shot rallies and 12-shot rallies. And remember, a 0-shot rally is a double fault. It's the ball landing in the court. So 2015 Australian Open, I look at all the points that are played, and the number one rally length is a rally length of 1. One ball in the court happens more than anything else out there. And this is the halo effect of the serve. So a 1-shot rally happens first, 3 jumps 2 and 5 jumps 4, and then everything becomes even. And 3 jumps 2 because the serve brings back a weak ball for shot number 3. After shot number 3, you get a weaker ball back for shot number 5. So when you're serving, you essentially go serve, easy ball, even. That's essentially what it's all about. So when we look at the top here, we see a 1-shot rally is around 30% of all points in our sport. Then it goes 3, then 2, then 5, then 4. Now, this is what's crazy is that when I first introduced this data at the 2016 Australian Open Coaches Conference, I asked, you know, these coaches had never, ever heard of this data before. Most of the answers were 4-shot rallies, 4 to 8. There's a lot of 8, you know, people saying 8. So then I asked Novak, what do you play the most? And he gets all excited. It's like, oh, I've never heard this question before. And, well, you know, what does Novak play the most? You know, I like to extend the rally a little bit. I like to move the ball around the court. He goes, I probably play more four-shot rallies than anything else. I ask Andy Murray. He settles on four. I ask Madison Keys. She settles on four. I ask Nick Bollettieri. The world thinks a four-shot rally happens the most. The best players, number one players in our sport, think a four-shot rally happens more than a one-shot rally. This is how crazy it is. Look at the percentage of a four-shot rally, about 7.5. It's a quarter. And I said this to Andy. I said, Andy, you know, you got a pretty good resume in tennis. You know, you've been number one in the world. And he's kind of smiling. I'm like, you've won a couple of Wimbledons, but, you know, who hasn't? That's all good. I go, Andy, seriously here, how in the world can you be so far off in the number of thinking that a four-shot rally, which happens 7.5% of the time, happens more than a one-shot rally, which happens 29.5%? How can you think that 7.5% happens more than 29.5%? And he had to think about it for a while. And he's like, you know, when you look at the highlight reels, when you look at ESPN, when you look at Twitter, when the shots that are more memorable, they're the longer rallies. They're the longer rallies. We remember them the most. You know, a 28-shot rally happens in Monte Carlo. 20 seconds later, go to Twitter and the ATP World Tour feed. There it is. It's a spectacular rally, but it's not going to happen a lot. And we put so much emphasis in it. This is what I call, that's page one. This is what page two. You know, if you're a beginner, start here on page two. Get the ball in the court. Consistency, it's great. But if you're a tournament player, focus your attention on page one. Page one was 89% of our sport. 2019 Tennis Congress. This is out in Tucson, Arizona. It's an adult camp. It's amazing. If you need more information on it, Google it. It's awesome. So I was out there coaching there and with Warren Pretorius, and we videoed 14 sets. So, you know, we had all these people play there, 3-5, 4-0, 4-5, you know, all mixed in that wash, 622 points. And we asked them, you know, are you guys consistent? You know, are we going to see long rallies? Oh, yeah, we're very consistent players. We're going to see a lot of long rallies. I mean, these are 30, 40, 50, 60-year-old people that, you know, played a lot of tennis, and they think that they put a ton of balls in the court. And, you know, all this pro data about short rallies, that's for the pros, Craig. We put the ball in the court. We are club players. That's what we do. We've had all the practice over the years. We've had so many lessons. So here's the data. What happened the most, 26%. Almost identical to the pros. Then a two-shot rally, 17%. Then a three-shot rally, 12%. Then double faults. The fourth most common thing that these supposedly self-rated consistent players did was a double fault. They are obsessing about 10-shot rallies, 11-shot rallies, which happened 7 times. A one-shot rally happened 162 times. A seven-shot rally, 23. So, you know, there's still a little bit of volume there. But we've got this wrong idea, or this fantasy world that we're in, that, you know, the 13-shot rally, the one 13-shot rally, we remember. But the 162 return errors and a one-shot rallies, yeah, there's a sprinkling of aces, but it's the return error. This data set is screaming at you. Work on your return to serve. Put the return back in play. Against a first serve, higher, slower, deeper down the middle. Against the second serve, more aggression. You're looking to force an error. A two-shot rally, serve went in, return went in, you miss. Serve went in, return went in, you miss. It happens all the time. You should be doing that at your club with your coach. You serve to your coach, the coach returns it or feeds it out of the basket, gives you a tough ball, put that ball back in the court. You know, I had a lesson here a couple of weeks ago with a 5-0 guy. And, you know, one of the first things we talked about is that we started playing points to figure out what he's doing, and he's playing offense on defense. And I told him this. I said this, the second most common thing in the first four shots is a serve plus one error. So he hits a serve. I had a real good return, and he blocks it back down the middle and deep. And I catch the ball. I'm like, that's one of the best shots you'll ever hit. He's like, Craig, before this lesson, I would have ripped that ball and made an error. I would have played offense and made an error. And now, after our discussion, I'm playing defense and I'm staying in the point. The average rally length for the adult players that think they're the most consistent in the world is 3.3 shots. The serve went in, the return went in, the serve plus one went in, and that's about the end of it. You know, on the practice court in Tuscany, we want rhythm, ball after ball after ball after ball after ball. Doesn't happen in a match. This is how it happens in a match. This is like an earthquake. See that big bang that happens at the start, that one-shot rally, 29%. Boom. And then it quickly dissipates. You know, one of the things that you do, and I'm going to annotate right here, is one of the things that you do on the practice court is you put so much emphasis in these longer rallies of 9+. So I'm just going to kind of draw there. You know, this is where your focus is. And who cares? Because this is the reality of a match. 3%, 2%, 2%. This is what you're ignoring, the 0-4. I want you to make the green area your priority on the practice court because it is going to be your priority once the match starts. Get less of the red area in the practice court and get more of the green area happening for you in practice. This is Novak at the 2018 US Open. He played one-shot rallies, then three-shot rallies, then five-shot rallies, then two-shot rallies, and four-shot rallies. You know, surely in the leading five rally lengths, people can say, well, he probably played eight-shot rallies. No, not even close. A lot of short stuff out there. Under 12. Now, this is national level under 12. These are really good. This is a really good level. So I would say, you know, in the older rating, probably the real good kids, you know, probably the average about 4.5. I'd say there's some 5.0 kids in here for sure. But 4.0, 4.5, 5, you know, a couple of 5.0s. So you can certainly relate to this data set here. If we look at 0-4, the under 12s are playing for the boys 55% and for the women 57%. So we can see 0-4 is always the most dominant. We never say, okay, in under 12 girls, you know, 0-4 is at 30% and 5-8 becomes number one or 9+ becomes number one. It doesn't happen. You're always playing 0-4 first. Under 12 boys, well, this is an analysis only in the first four shots. The thing that happens the most, we combine one thing from the left column, one thing from the right. The thing that happens the most is a return error, just like the pros. Then a serve plus one error, then a return plus one error, then a double fault. This is what the first four shots teaches us. We know that the first four shots happens the most out of all of the rally lengths. And the thing that happens the most is you're making a return error, a serve plus one error, a return plus one error, then a double fault. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? You're looking at Switzerland. You're looking at that ice face right there because it's tough. Look how tough it is. The things that are happening the most are early errors in your game. So one of the simple things to understand about this presentation is, as a takeaway, is the first two times I touch the ball, put it in the court. In many ways, your job is to survive the first four shots and get it into a 5-8 and get some patterns of play going. Now, in the first four shots, if you're hitting a first serve, you're trying to immediately extract an error. If you're hitting a second serve return, you're trying to immediately extract an error, which is 1 and 2 right there, a return error and a serve plus one error. If you're hitting a second serve, make your serve plus one. And if you're hitting a first serve return, put that ball in the court. So there's some different battles going on there. Remember, we talked about in general, tennis is about 70% errors in general when we look at all of it. But if we only isolate 0-4, it's 80%. Once again, exhibit F on the picture of Switzerland and our ice face. Look how difficult it is there. The errors accumulate more. We're finished with the presentation. I'm going to come out of this sharing and come back and see you guys right here. And, you know, I think the big takeaways here are whether you like it or not, you are going to play more 0-4 than anything else. And whether you like it or not, your performance in 0-4 is going to dictate whether you win or lose the match much more than anything else that happens in that match. So pleasure to share this information with you. We've got junior data, we've got adult data, we've got pro data. They're all washing together and sending the message that there is nothing more important than you will do on the court is those first two touches. This is important, and those first two touches are more important than all the other touches that follow in a point. So cheers, and thank you guys very much.
Thanks a lot, Craig. Do you have time for maybe just a couple questions?
Sure, go ahead.
Appreciate it. Yeah, and I have this big notebook that I wrote some notes on while you were presenting. I really appreciate it. And it really gets me thinking back to, as you said, you know, my training. A lot of times we had these games where like you had to hit 20 balls past the service line and, you know, you'd get points deducted if you didn't, and you ended up hitting like 80 balls and just not the right way to train, and just very illuminating. So you mentioned these eight ways to force it.
Let me just sure. Tweak that a little bit. You can make that a minor segment of your training. Mm-hmm. That can be, if we get a pie, if you want to say that's 5% of our pie, fine. Not 95% of our pie, though.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I feel like it was a huge percentage. Mm-hmm. So Craig, so you mentioned the eight ways to force an error: consistency, direction, depth, height, spin, power, court positioning, and time. I was wondering, for the amateur players, the club level players who are the majority of the audience today, which of those would you suggest that they focus on to help them, to force errors more often?
Yeah. So, think of the list of eight. They're all wonderful. They've all made the highlight reel. Think of them as precious gems. So we have a ruby, we have a sapphire, we have an emerald, we have topaz, we have an Australian opal, this beautiful Australian opal, but we have a diamond. There's one diamond on that list. They're all good, but the diamond is depth. You get the ball deep, and deep is essentially, it's the 10 and underline. You measure halfway between the service line and the baseline. And that 10 and underline, anything past that signifies a deep ball. And when the ball is hit deep, the opponent has got a decision to make. Do I back up so I can hit a regular shot, a regular backswing, or do I stay and block? There must be a compromise somewhere on a deep ball. There must be a compromise. And the compromise either is in the court position or the size of the swing. And most of the time, the opponent is not willing to compromise or doesn't know that they need to compromise. And they hit the same size swing and get bad contact and miss. So hitting the ball deep is a really big deal. Depth is the diamond.
Got it. Amazing. Thanks so much for that, Craig. And then if you were to master that, what would be the second best, in your opinion, characteristic of the eight ways to then add on top?
Yeah. What is kind of hidden? So when you go down the list, the first four shots is all about court position. It's, you know, you're up in the court more when you're serving and when you're returning. You're trying to take time away, which is a big deal. There's a lot more power at the start of the point, you know, especially with the first serve and a second serve return. And we've got a lot more spin, whether it's the spin on the serve or on the return. So when you look at that list of eight, the ones at the start, even though they're not set in any order, but the ones in the start lend themselves to inject into the point later. And the ones at the bottom inject themselves earlier. What I would like to see you do is have a better focus on court position, staying up around the baseline, dictating more, not going back so far. You know, players that play back, it's so difficult to hit a winner. It's so difficult to get to the net when there's a short ball. A lot of times when there's a short ball, you're actually on defense, running up, trying to scoop the ball up. So I would definitely say, okay, I need to improve my game. This presentation is going to help me do that. And not getting back so far. Have a real emphasis on trying to stay up around the baseline hit a good shot, maybe creep onto or inside the baseline in anticipation of a short ball and get all over the net. The net is a wonderful place to be. It's a fun place to be. And, taking time away from opponents is essentially done with court position. Yes, it's also done with power, but court position is a really good one.
Thanks for that, Craig. And so, in terms of mentality and strategy, because obviously we don't want to be going for the lines and things like that winners that are very tough and not the majority of points that are won in the sport. So should we almost discard like hitting to the corners and just basically have the mindset of, let me just master depth, it can be in the middle and just forget about, angled shots, or what's your take on that?
In another presentation, I get very much into the baseline. I cut up into A, B, C, D. If you have the juice court at the baseline, just put a line right down the middle of the juice half of the court. And the outer half is A, the inner half is B, the inner half of the ad court is C, and the outer half is D. So what I want you to do is understand that there are four very different zones on the court. And different things happen there. So, for example, most players are righty to righty, and most balls in tennis go C to C, which is a slight kick through the ad court. I'm trying to get it away from my opponent's more dominant forehand. I'm trying to get it to my opponent's backhand. But if I go to D wider, the single sideline's there, and I'm going to miss too much. So most of the traffic goes to C. Position D is about, it's almost the assist area. It's almost like getting somebody a little bit further in trouble, getting them off the court, making them hit a backhand. A few winners out there, but it's like I'm climbing the ladder, through position D. Position A is where most winners are hit. So most forehand winners are hit to A, most backhand winners are hit to A. So we rally to C and D and push and finish this other way. And then position B is actually a wonderful place to play if you get the ball deep, because the natural angle is coming back to B, which opponents don't want to do. So if you had a good ball to B and with its depth, and they've got to try and, do something that they don't want to come back to your forehand, they'll miss a million balls. So a lot of times when I'm playing points, I'm absolutely targeting position B with depth and spin. And I know that I'm going to get a lot of errors out of that zone. So it's kind of like a black hole over there that, if you hit a quality ball into there, it just like, what happened? You would think hitting to the middle of the court to somebody's forehand is a bad thing, but it's actually an amazing thing. So I would encourage you to think more about the ABCD areas and what they're typically used for.
Brilliant. Thanks, Craig. And, it's clear that we really need to focus on these first four shots. Thank you so much for this amazing presentation. So I obviously want to educate. Thanks, Craig. And I obviously want to just educate people about where they can learn more about you. And obviously all the links are below the video. So please check them out of all of Craig's work. But Craig, where can people find out more about your stuff? And if there's any, projects or courses or anything, please let us know.
Yeah, my website is braingametennis.com. There are 11 courses on there. Some are all about net play. We've got singles. We've got singles courses, doubles courses, and also two courses on the mental and emotional aspects of our sport, which are a very big deal. So, there's also a blog that I have on there with a ton of free information. I write for the ATP and I write for the New York Times. So I'm linking a lot of that back there. So if you want to go to the website and follow what I'm doing there, you're going to get a lot of information about the strategy of our sport.
Wonderful, Craig. And I've been to a webinar that you, had hosted and just had pages upon pages of notes. So I highly encourage everybody to check out Brain Game Tennis for sure. So Craig, again, thanks a lot for being on. And it was a pleasure. And I really appreciate all the great things you're doing for the sport.
My pleasure. And all the best to the players out there. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks.
All right. I really hope you enjoyed this masterclass with Craig O'Shaughnessy on the first four shots. Really, really illuminating stuff, amazing stuff. And I really enjoyed it myself, and I'm going to listen to it again and again. So And if you did enjoy this episode, I'd really, really appreciate it if you would subscribe to the Tennis Files podcast. Just hit that big, juicy subscribe button in your favorite podcast app of choice. And I also want to leave you with a quote from Oprah Winfrey. And Oprah said, "Step out of the history that is holding you back. Step into the new story you are willing to create." And that's a very pertinent quote for a lot of us, where we kind of hearken back to perhaps past failures in tennis, or we characterize ourselves as not being, you know, a good player, not being clutch in the big moments, things like that. And we just have to create a new story for ourselves and work at it every day and change our psychology and mentalities. And that's really the way that is going to lead us to bigger and better things in our tennis career and in life. So I hope you enjoyed that quote, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And that's pretty much it. So yeah, I hope you have a great time on the court. Just keep enjoying the game, keep improving just a little bit every day, and you'll see some huge gains over time. So I will be seeing you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. This is Mehrban Aranchad, and I'm going to sign out. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.